Blog Talk Radio.
Popular demand, backed by People's Choice, is a radio show that left a deep impact on a community. A radio show that a community stood behind. A radio show a community believes in and trusts. A radio show that enters your hearts and homes. A radio show you love. MNBRT Radio is back on the air. Join Elusive One and the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team radio show as they invite guests on to help bring truth and shed light on Bigfoot and Bigfoot research. This is a radio show that's by the common Bigfoot researcher, for the common Bigfoot researcher, about the common Bigfoot researchers, with in-depth questions and answers, new witnesses and their sightings and encounters, asking questions that you want the answers to. The time has come for MNBRT Radio. And now, here's Elusive One.
And we are live. Tonight is Monday, August 14th, 2017. I'm your host, Elusive One. Welcome all, one and all, to another episode of MNBRT Radio. We have a great guest lined up for you guys this week. Before we get to Justin, we are going to bring on my co-host, who I affectionately call the Mouth of the South. He's from Mississippi. Henry, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. And we do want to send all our thoughts and prayers and good wishes out to the nature boy, Ric Flair. It looks like he's in some pretty dire straits, and hope he comes out of this.
Oh, well, okay, all right. Stop the bus. What's going on? I don't watch wrestling. I mean, I'm too busy with life, basically. But what's going on?
Apparently, he's been put in a medically induced coma. He's having some serious health issues, according to his spokesperson. So, well, he's 68 years old, so he's up there in years. And I just, hope this isn't. I just hope he's not going to go to that great ring in the sky anytime soon.
Oh, man, the Ultimate Survivor Series. Man, wow, yes, definitely our thoughts are with him. And wow, that's, or as he would say, woo, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Crazy. All right, man, well, definitely dropped the bomb right there, and yeah, we hope for a speedy recovery and all the best, no doubt. With that being said, what else do you have for us?
And I also want to mention, want to thank everybody for their thoughts and prayers for my mother. She's had two cataract surgeries. She had one last week. She had one this week, and she's doing very well.
These
cataract surgery is not, it's not like it used to be. It's not that difficult these days to get your cataracts taken out, thankfully. So, and by last Thursday, she was able to see out of her right eye just fine, and pretty soon she won't need glasses except for reading.
Okay. Wow. So, praise the Lord.
She's doing very well. She's had to wear a patch, of course they had to, and yeah, right, Dave. Yeah. Same day in and out on surgery. Exactly. It's basically outpatient surgery. So these days, it's amazing how much medical technology has advanced.
Yes. It really, ain't that the truth? Just in the past 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Nuts.
But
I'm glad your mom's doing better, a lot better.
Yeah, she drove over there, and then my sister went with her. She drove her back. So, sister drove her back. Because you're not supposed to drive for a certain amount of time after that. But
I hope not. Wearing a high patch, having eye surgery.
Right, but she's doing fine. And of course, I may have told y'all that, a couple months ago when I went to the eye doctor, I have cataracts also, but not serious enough for surgery yet. But so I do have to wear reading glasses, which ain't bad. I mean, it's not bad. Actually, I think I look pretty distinguished wearing glasses. So,
hello. Girls like that, Henry, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I only wear them for reading, and they're basically for reading, so it's not that bad, My mom she has a pair of reading glasses she uses for a computer and for reading and everything, so
that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. You know, it sounds like she's on the mend, so praise the Lord for that.
Oh, she's doing fine. She's doing fine.
Good.
Yeah.
That's so, right ahead. What do we have lined up for HBM's Crypto Corner? And speaking of HBM's Crypto Corner, you just got done doing HBM's Crypto Corner.
Yeah.
Earlier.
I did. And I'm going to kind of give a Reader's Digest synopsis of what I discussed earlier. First of all, the Low Files, which is on Wednesday nights on A&E at 10 Eastern, 9 Central, they're going to go after Bigfoot this Wednesday. And I believe Matt Moneymaker is supposed to be on this episode. So that'll be 10 Eastern, 9 Central on A&E. Check your local listings for time and channel. So, and also there is an episode where he went out with the NAWAC, North American Wood Ape Conservancy, and that episode is going to air sometime this season also. It's called Wood Ape. The episode is called Wood Ape. And that's the one where he claimed that he had been attacked by a Sasquatch, but now he's kind of recanted it and said, well, you know, I have a feeling he did that for ratings, you know, and trying to boost the show.
Right. Yeah.
So, but still, I mean, it's very interesting. And he is one of the few celebrities who is, he's one of the few celebrities that is interested in this. I mean, Matt LeBlanc, who played Joey on Friends, he's interested in it. Jack Black.
Yeah.
Trying to think who else. Megan Fox has mentioned a few times how interested she is in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Andy Richter from the Conan O'Brien show.
Huh. Well, there's a few people, it sounds like, out there.
Mm-hmm. There are a few celebrities that are fascinated by this by the Sasquatch and by like paranormal stuff.
I'd take Megan's Fox off Squatch, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Boy,
I had to look around and make sure the girlfriend wasn't around. Okay.
And then, let's see, our good friend over at Monster X Radio, Gunner and Shane. Gunner has a new program, which just debuted yesterday, called Squatch Talk. And their first guests were Russell Acord and Bob Gimlin. And they were talking about the upcoming International Bigfoot Conference, which is coming up on Labor Day weekend out in Kennewick, Washington. And they also talked about the new DVD, the new Bob Gimlin DVD, which is called Beyond Bigfoot. And it's not just, and this indicates that, and according to the trailer, it's not just about, Sasquatch. It's not just about his experience with Sasquatch. It's about his life experience in general and some of the things that he has done and some of the things that he's gone through in his life. So it's a documentary about Bob. It's about his life beyond, it's not just centered on Bigfoot. You know, which would be fascinating enough. But, I mean, obviously, his life, I mean, some of the things I've heard, about Bob, he's talked about, riding motorcycles with Evel Knievel, being on the boxing team in the Navy, and being a part of the Sheriff's Posse in Yakima County, Washington. I mean, he's done so much.
Yeah.
He's been through so much in his life, and this new DVD covers that. Covers his life. From what I understand, Russ said, they were able to fit 2 hours into this. It's about 2 hours in length. But he says he shot at least 6 or 7 hours of material with Bob. So it'd be kind of cool if, like, let's say they release a new DVD and they include some of the extra features in there, maybe. Maybe some of the extra footage that they shot. That'd be kind of cool.
What is the DVD going for itself?
It's $21.95 on BobGimlin.net. I'm going to give the website for everybody that wants to check it out. There it is. Russ is, of course, he's kind of Bob's agent, you might say, his manager or agent. And personally, I think it's good to see Bob kind of establishing an online presence thanks to Russ, and it's a tremendous thing. And there's four signed photos you can purchase at BobGimlin.net. They're $10 a piece for the photos. Of course, those of us who would be attending the 50th anniversary of the Patterson Gimlin Film Celebration, we can get those photos in person.
Yes.
So, I decided to go ahead and order the DVD myself. So I'm going to be getting a copy of that DVD. And by the way, the first 250 copies of that DVD are signed by Bob himself. So that's a great thing in and of itself, the fact that the first 250 are signed by Bob. So for those who've never had an opportunity to meet Bob, this will be the next best thing. You get his life story. You get a signed DVD. So there you go.
Good deal, but, all the way around.
But of course, those of us who've had the absolute pleasure of meeting Bob, you know, we know what kind of integrity he has, what kind of character he has. You know, he's just a tremendous individual. A lot of us, we're fortunate enough to call him friend. You know, he calls us friend. So
yes, he does.
So, but we're more than friends. We're like family. I mean, I consider Bob like a grandfatherly figure, definitely.
I hear you. Grandpa Bob.
Or Uncle Bob. Some call him Uncle Bob, yeah. So, yeah, Bob is, I mean, he is a great guy, salt of the earth. And he will be coming to the 50th anniversary Patterson Gimlin Film Celebration. He will also be at the International Bigfoot Conference coming up on Labor Day weekend. As a matter of fact, I'm going to put the website for that if anybody's interested. If anybody's in the Kennewick, Washington area, or maybe planning to go there.
Man, it's been years since I've been to Kennewick.
Well, yeah, you went there for the conference in 2012.
Yeah, the Primal People Conference.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And, you know, Bob's going to be there. Jeff Meldrum is going to be at the International Bigfoot Conference. Cliff Berrickman. Derek Reynolds in the Olympic Project, Lyle Blackburn, Shelley Covington, Montana, all kinds of great folks are going to be speaking there.
Very sweet.
David Ellis, Derek Reynolds, just lots of great folks. They're going to be there at the International Conference. So
very, very cool.
I can't go this year, but I'm thinking about going next year to the third annual, definitely.
Well, yeah, that's on the to-do list. I hear you there.
Yep.
So
of course,
much going on.
The Texas Bigfoot Conference is coming up in 7.5 weeks. There's going to be some great speakers and guests there. Lyle Blackburn, Shelley Covington, Montana, Jerry Hestan, Ken Gerhardt, Chester Moore, Lyle Blackburn, and Lauren Coleman and Cliff Berrickman. They're going to be there. So, speaking of the 50th anniversary celebration, they have added Ranger Robert Leiterman as a speaker from the Bluff Creek Project. He's going to be speaking on Friday night. Yes, at the VFW Hall. Mm-hmm. He's going to talk about the Bluff Creek Project. And I give him as much credit as anybody else for actually finding the actual Patterson Gimlin film site. He and Ian... Rowdy Kelly and Steven Stroyfer, you know, they were able to find it back around 2010.
Yep. I remember having them three on the show.
Yep. They took Bill Munns there in 2012, and Bill Munns was able to identify certain landmarks. That's all documented. They have videos on YouTube of that when they took Bill there. So, great stuff. I mean, I'm looking forward to hearing his presentation about the Bluff Creek Project. Of course, Bluff Creek Project has done some great things, too. They put cameras up in that area, and they were able to catch photos of a species that was supposed to be extinct in that area, the Humboldt Martin.
Oh, really?
So, yes. They got a few trail cam pictures of a creature almost as elusive as Sasquatch itself.
No doubt.
Yeah, so some great stuff. I think it's bluffcreekproject.blogspot.com. And they have trail cams up out there, and they sometimes catch footage of cougars and bears and all kinds of interesting critters that come through there.
Good stuff. Good stuff, man. It's interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope it goes for a long time.
So we're 9.5 weeks from that, from the 50th anniversary celebration. As I mentioned, 7.5 weeks until the Texas Bigfoot Conference. So it's coming.
A lot going on. Oh, yeah.
It's coming up pretty quick. Plus, I believe, yes, they are going to hold a Bluff Creek or Boggy Creek Festival in South Arkansas this year. They skipped doing it last year, but Lyle Blackburn says they're going to get it together for 2017. This will, of course, be the first one since the passing of Smokey Crabtree.
Yeah,
so,
another friend, yep.
Yep. So I know Lyle's getting that together. Of course, the Sasquatch Summit is coming in November on Ocean Shores, Washington.
Gee whiz.
I know Bob's going to be there.
Things are just crack-a-lacking left and right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff is going on, I'm telling you. A lot of these conferences and things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And
here in Minnesota, we have the Bigfoot Music Festival coming up in September in Reamer, Minnesota.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very cool.
That sounds cool.
It's going to be fun.
And, of course, we already know of two individuals that are going to be at next year's Ohio Bigfoot Conference. It will mark the return of the one and only Tom Yamron and, yes, Bob Gimlin.
Oh, yeah. Brother Yams.
For 2018.
Yes,
and
yes.
From what I understand, Yams is doing just fine. You know, they've got Terry Smith helping out with organizing this event. He's doing a great job organizing the 50th anniversary event, along with, of course, Mark Worth and John Kirk.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
So you are going to make it.
I can neither confirm nor deny right now, but I'm working on it still, brother. Yes, I'm doing everything I can.
Just keep me posted. Keep me posted.
Oh,
because,
I will. I will. I will. I'll be coming to you for answers for my questions.
Cool.
Yes, yes.
Tickets are still available for it too, in case you haven't. In case there's anybody who wants a ticket, they're still available.
Cool.
Let's see. It's $25 for Friday night at the VFW, but they'll only be able to accommodate 100 people for that. But it's 250 people for Saturday in Eureka. And it'll be $75 for reserved seating and $50 for unreserved seating.
Okay.
And also, well, the event Friday night, you can purchase drinks, but there'll be no food available. But there's plenty of places, there's a few places to eat in Willow Creek, so you'll be fine with that. And
also,
Eureka on Saturday.
All right. I'm stoked.
And the email address, if you're using PayPal, the email address is bigfootpg50@att.net. And those funds go directly to Tom Yamron. If, let's say, you paid $200-something for the original ticket prices, you'll get a refund back. I got my refund last week. So, and plus, there's still opportunities to sponsor speakers.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I contributed $50 towards sponsoring Cliff Berrickman. So there you go.
Cool. Very cool. I didn't know they had that option out there.
Yes, you do. Just get in contact with Tom Yamron. Ask him about it. Or Terry Smith on Facebook. You can also get in contact with him. about it. Or Amanda, his daughter Amanda Smith. You can get in contact with her because she's helping to organize all. So, anyhow, that is it for this week. I know it's quite long-winded, but, hey, we got to get the information out there.
Yes, we do, and I'm so glad you do that. Thank you very, very much, brother.
Sure. So let's get to our guest.
Let's do it. Let's do it and do it right. As I mentioned earlier in the show, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's guest is Justin Chernivsky. Chernivsky. I knew I was going to do that too. My tongue is bleeding bad. Justin is a former wildland firefighter, filmmaker, and photographer based out of Alberta, Canada. He is also the director and producer of the 2016 Bigfoot documentary, Wildman, My Search for Sasquatch. Justin's fascination with Bigfoot began in his childhood when his dad introduced him to the subject. Since then, his curiosity led him to the pursuit of the creature's discovery. Being a former outdoor guide and forestry worker, Justin has spent countless hours in the wilderness and is now more convinced than ever that Sasquatch may, in fact, be a reality. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Justin to MNVRT Radio. Justin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on again. That's how we get excited. We don't clap. We whoop like Bigfoot.
Yeah. There you go.
We whoop and we wood knock. So for a lot of people who don't know you, I mean, that was a great bio and everything. Did you? Are you from originally? Are you Canadian there, eh? Originally,
I am Canadian. Yeah. Born in Saskatchewan, but raised in Alberta most of my life. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you got really sucked into this from your father.
Mostly, I was always interested in it as a kid, but that's mostly because he would show me films on TV and we would rent like VHS tapes over about Bigfoot. So that's where it all started.
Gotcha. You know, I can kind of relate to you there. I mean, I kind of grew up myself. I mean, well, for me, it was like gorillas at the local zoo here in St. Paul, Minnesota. That really kind of that lit the fire for me, so to speak. But your father, I mean, watching your documentary, Wildman, My Search for Sasquatch, your father had like a big role in this, it sounds like, and I just wanted to say that's really, really cool. He also kind of had an encounter, I guess you could say, a Class B encounter.
Yeah. He is convinced that he had rocks thrown at him. So he believes 100% that it was Bigfoot.
Well, you know, I mean, I've had that happen to me too in one of our research areas here in Minnesota. Really, really cool incident and story. But, you know, from your father's incident, I mean, how did it all go down? What was the synopsis of that? What unfolded? If you could share that with us.
Well, him and a buddy of his, they were pretty keen on fishing.
Okay.
And at the time, my dad lived on Vancouver Island, and him and his buddy would always go up to these remote lakes. They would just kind of look at a map and pick a lake and drive to it and then, you know, see how the fishing was. So they found a lake called Henry Lake one time, and it actually, like, they had been to this lake multiple times before this experience happened. I think it was on the fifth or sixth time, something like that. But they had like an inflatable raft, and as they're filling it up, this large rock comes tumbling down this cliff. And if you watch the documentary, you can see that this lake is surrounded by steep hills and cliffs.
Yeah, it really is.
So, like, I know you can say like, oh, rocks fall all the time. It's really steep and rocks break away. They do. So, like, the first rock comes down, and it's crashing through the trees. It's a really big rock, and it gets their attention, obviously, so they're kind of spooked. But I guess, like, the first time you kind of think, okay, it could have just fallen. I don't think the first thought at that moment was Bigfoot.
Hmm.
But it wasn't until like 15 minutes later when they're actually on the water that they hear this really loud splash, and another rock, a really large rock, came flying out of the shore. And it's not like the first one where it came from high up and kind of tumbled down. It just kind of launched itself from the shore, and it hit a big spruce tree. I think it was probably like 6 or 7 inches in diameter, and kind of bent it over and then splashed in the water, and the tree kind of flung back up. And I don't know, it was pretty exciting.
That's pretty dang cool, man. I mean, that would have to be like a big rock that would do something like that.
Exactly.
That's really cool. But, you know, seeing a tree that just whips right back up after you're hearing the spruce, and you're looking over to see what that sound was, and you see this tree whipping back up, and you're like, what the heck? You know, I don't know what could have thrown something that big. It would definitely take a lot of strength. And the way the sounds that you're describing, it would sound like a big rock, not just like a beaver hitting its tail or just a rock going boop, but this one sounded like it had, like, I guess you could say, mass and weight to it, like, that just splashed in the water.
Totally.
Yeah, you know, man.
Yeah, and, like, that location, every little sound echoes quite a bit. And I was thinking, like, when a rock does fall from high up, you hear it when it's falling. Like, you're not surprised all of a sudden when it's at the bottom and hitting the water.
That's so cool. Now, you actually did your whole documentary at Henry Lake, right?
Oh, pardon me?
You did your whole documentary, I guess you say, at Henry Lake.
Sorry, I keep losing you at the end of your sentence there.
Oh, you did your documentary at Henry Lake?
I did. The first part of it is at Henry Lake. And then the second part is in Alberta, near Nordegg.
Oh, gotcha. When you were there at Henry Lake, you were there by yourself, weren't you?
That's correct, yeah.
Oh. How many nights did you stay out there?
I was there for about 4 nights.
Now,
and
it was probably
a silly idea.
I can relate to you. I spent the night in the woods myself, but don't tell my mom because I'll get scolded. Still, I'll give her another gray hair, basically. But you know, I have. Things are definitely different when you're all different. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure you do. So you got to be more aware. You got to be more self-centered. You got to be more grounded. You can't really let your mind go out wandering because then you'll spook yourself.
Hey, you're sounding kind of far away. I don't know if it's your phone or what.
Oh, no. Can you hear me now a little bit better?
Got you now.
Yeah, that's better right there, yeah.
Okay, I'll hold my hand up. For the remainder of the show, maybe I'll get better reception. No, I was just saying, Justin, I can relate to you. I mean, you know, when you're out there camping, you really got to be more self-centered, not self-centered, but grounded, more aware. Your senses are more heightened because you're by yourself. And if you really can't be in your mind a whole lot, because when you have a tendency to be in your mind and you're hearing these sounds, and, you know, you're out there, of course, looking for a Sasquatch, you got to be really self-disciplined and staying out of your mind and just not regarding every sound as being a possible or possibly Sasquatch related. That's how you spook yourself.
Totally. And like, I admit my imagination does go nuts. Like if I'm out in the bush alone.
Yeah.
Well, cause you're expecting Sasquatch and it's like,
yeah,
you know?
Oh, I do. It is. You're totally right. So in the 4 days that you were out there filming, I mean, I got to see the documentary, but this is for the listeners who have not yet seen the documentary. What was it like? I mean, can you explain the solitude, the sound, the wilderness, the wildlife for them?
Well, on Vancouver Island, it's extremely, like, it's a very wet climate. And when I first got to the lake, there were remnants of a tropical storm going through. So, like, when I initially drove there, there was, like, a huge storm at the lake. And I remember there was lightning striking, like, right next to my vehicle. And it was crazy. And I was trying to set up my tent that first night. And I was setting up tarps, and the tarps were, like, the grommets, the metal grommets on the tarp were just ripping out. And it was just, it was hell. So I actually decided to pack everything up and leave. And so I went back to a hotel that first night and kind of regrouped, got my wits about me, and then got prepared again and went out the next day for a second shot to try and wait till the weather cleared a bit. Though when I got back, it was still quite rainy. It just wasn't as intense as the first attempt. So.
And Henry Lake, it looks like a beautiful, absolute beautiful location. Of course, when the sun is shining, it's that cloudiness and the dark weather that really kind of puts that eerie feeling on the location.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very remote. It's in the middle of nowhere. Like, I didn't see one person when I was there. And it's deep in the bush. Like, you have to go through a crazy network of logging roads to get there. And when I drove there the first time, I got lost. It took me about 4 or 5 hours to get there. I ended up driving down roads that I shouldn't have gone down. So it was pretty scary. Plus, my vehicle was an old beater. And it was not doing good on the drive from Alberta to British Columbia. So when I got there, I was kind of second-guessing myself. But I thought, oh, you know, I came all this way. Might as well commit to it.
Sure. Now, how long of a drive is it usually from Alberta to BC?
Oh, it's quite a ways. Like, I like to drive a whole day and then spend the night on the West Coast, and then the next morning I usually drive to the ferry and go to the island. So I think it's like 1,200 kilometers or something like that.
Man. Wow.
I think you are over the limit there, Abe.
Oh, am I really already?
I believe so.
Oh well, we got a thing going on here. It's the wow factor basically that goes on here. when I say the wow factor is like really high, it means we got a really good guest. So. Actually, it's a compliment. Oh, man. So you're out there, you're in, you know, BC, you're at Henry Lake, you're trying to solicit a response from a Bigfoot, correct?
I was planning on, you know, like, I want to have visual contact. That was my goal, to get something on camera.
Wow.
But like,
by yourself, though.
Well, I figured, you know, I have better chances if I'm alone. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want other people making lots of noise.
And you're right. Yes.
I want to throw in, Digger Dog says that 1,200 kilometers is about 700 miles. So that's quite a journey.
Oh, good
Lord.
Definitely
an adventure.
Yeah.
So aside from all the weather and trying to, you know, film everything and get all the shots I wanted, I still have to try and look for Bigfoot. So it was a lot to do, like, all on my own.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what type of techniques were you trying to use to get a response from a Sasquatch or to get a visual from a Sasquatch?
Okay, well, at that time, I was a total noob in the Sasquatch world. I'm not a Sasquatch researcher. I don't claim to be a Sasquatch researcher. I'm the average dude. I like making films. That's my thing. It's just I'm compelled to – it's something that really interests me. So as far as my techniques go, they're very amateur. So I would resort to making whooping calls and clacking rocks together, things of that nature, because that's – you know, all I really knew at the time. I get a lot of flack for that. People don't like the whooping calls. It hurts my feelings.
Oh, I love it. Hey, I'll whoop with you any day. We'll whoop it up.
Perfect.
Yes. I mean, that's just great. That's just great because, you know, that's exactly some of the things that we hear or that are related to us in reports. Historically and even in modern times, they hear people have described hearing rock clacking or whoops coming from across the lake. So, I mean, it's not like you did anything that was weird or anything. It was just, you know, you were trying to do what you had a goal, and you were trying to get out there and set to conquer that, to execute your goal. And heck, you know what?
Yeah.
I was just whooping it up last weekend, but the weekend before, I was at a team member's house, and we had a great time. We were out in the field, and this coming weekend, I'll be doing the same at another team member's place. You know, and it works sometimes. Sometimes we get the responses. Sometimes we get the wood knocks. I mean, when it comes down to Bigfoot field research, it's not every single time that we go out there and we get something happen. It all depends. I mean, there's different variations that you got to take into consideration as far as, number one, are they in the area? And number two, if they are in the area, are they going to respond to you? So, yeah, just, you know what, keep on doing what you're doing, man. you have nothing to lose and everything to gain, basically.
Well, exactly. Like, I figured, like, the only other thing I could do if I'm not doing those things is just sit there and wait, and I didn't really feel like waiting. It can get lonely and bored out there by yourself.
Yeah. Hey, you know, how is Henry Lake for fishing? I mean, you said your dad and his friend were quite avid fishermen. Did you have a chance to wet a line?
I did not put a line in myself, but you could see, like, trout in the water. You could see the fish just swimming around. It's super clear when it's not swimming.
Oh. So is it a glacier? Is it a glacier lake then?
It is, yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's really nice.
That sounds beautiful. My goodness.
It sure does. But I bet you it's a cold lake, though. Very cold.
I didn't, you know, really dip my feet in. But, yeah, I'm assuming it's...
Yeah, I say that because here in Minnesota, up in northern Minnesota, we do have a few glacier lakes where the water is kind of like that as well. And it is absolutely beautiful. Oh, gosh. It's been a while since I've been up there, but in one of our research areas, the water is like that. And, oh, dang, you just make me want to go up there this weekend instead of to the team member's house. So, with that being said, well, you were there at Henry Lake for the 4 days. Did you have any type of response happen?
I didn't have any kind of response. Nothing.
No.
No, it was pretty quiet, though. Like, there was times where I thought I could hear, like, whispering and, like, voices. But, like, I really think my mind was playing tricks on me. It's hard to say.
You know, and you know what? Stick with your guns. I mean, if you think you heard something, they have been known to chatter. They have been heard to mumble and things like that, where people who are hearing this is like, what the heck am I hearing? What is this? It sounds like somebody talking. Somebody mumbling? Is somebody talking? You know, so, I mean, they very well could have been there and observing you. You know, I'm sure that if they were there, pulling in with your vehicle was the red flag for them, like, hey, you know what, let's go check out this hairless wonder and see what he's got to offer and stuff. So, you know what, and if you were hearing that, it's associated. It's regular, I should say regular, but it's behavior, it's vocalizations that is we believe to be attributed to Sasquatch characteristics and behavior. So it very well could have been something and not your mind messing with you. Now, as far as that, you know, with the 4 days of being up there, how was the wildlife? What time of year did you go up there?
It was in October.
Mm.
So
fall season.
Yeah, it was very wet. I didn't see a lot of wildlife at all. Like, there was nothing. I think mainly because it was really stormy and probably a lot of animals were taking shelter. But I know if you're down in the valleys where the rivers are that time of year, the salmon runs are going on and there's lots of bear activity. But I was pretty high up.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I'm just curious.
I was just curious about the impressions y'all found in the moss. You know, the I imagine
yep.
y'all did y'all sort of go through all the list of what that could be. You kind of I know you're just a film. I know you're a filmmaker and everything, and but. Did you go through what? I mean, did you say is this a bear? Did you say is this perhaps human activity?
Yeah. Well, we spent probably the whole morning at that site where we found those tracks,
mm-hmm.
and everyone that was with me, like two of the guys were my coworkers, like in wildfire, so they have a lot of backcountry experience. We all are very familiar with, like. Wildlife identification and track identification, everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy, he was a forestry worker. I think he was a tree planter at the time. But, yeah, we were all very kind of seasoned in wildlife identification. So you could also see, like, if you watch the film, there's also a bear trackway that goes right by these Sasquatch
mm-hmm.
tracks, I'm going to call them, for lack of a better term right now, because I can't say for sure they were. But, yeah, it's pretty obvious in that situation what was from a bear and what wasn't. And it was just very, very strange. And we were the only people in that area as well. So.
Now, is that, like, very spongy material, like where you could easily make an impression in that?
It was quite spongy. We tried
mm-hmm.
to make impressions with our own feet after just to see, like, how deep it would go and how quickly the moss would rise back up. And it was really hard to get a permanent track to stay there like those
mm-hmm.
ones did. So it was very bizarre.
That is interesting. as far as I know, I remember you mentioned in the documentary that your dad said they had, what was it, that trees thrown in and stuff. Did your dad describe how big around these trees were, like the circumference of them?
Tree signs? Like?
No, didn't they have trees thrown at them or something, or logs? Or was it just rocks?
It was just rocks. There's a part in the film where he mentions, like, the trees where the rock was falling down. Like, they were big trees that this rock was, like, smashing against, and it would make, like, loud echoes.
Okay.
Yeah,
wow.
Just rocks thrown at them.
Oh, yeah. That is, yeah. Did you guys attempt to cast any of the impressions, or was that type of material just not conducive to that?
Pardon me?
I said, did you guys try to cast any of the impressions, or was that material not conducive to perhaps trying to cast something?
We had casting supplies, and
mm-hmm.
we had them with us at the time, but the moss was so, like, porous and stuff that, I thought it would have been really tricky to get a good cast because the plaster would just kind of seep through.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've had people tell me nowadays it's good to bring, like, plastic wrap or saran wrap or something with you to kind of lay in the
mm-hmm.
track first and then apply the casting material. So next time I find a track.
Now, see, that's a trick. I would have never thought of, you know, doing something like that, you know, using saran wrap. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Live and
learn,
right?
Like I said, I wasn't really an expert or anything on the subject.
Oh, right. I know. Now we have a question.
Those tracks were... Sorry?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention that the location where the tracks were was near Nordegg and not on Vancouver Island, so that was a completely different location than the rock throwing experience.
Digger Dog wanted to know if you visited Dr. John Bindernagel while still on the island.
I visited John, yeah.
Yeah, Digger Dog. If you haven't seen the documentary, Digger Dog, he has a very extensive interview with Dr. Bindernagel. Very good stuff. Very good stuff.
He's a very nice guy.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say for the people in the chat room, I did post the link to Justin's documentary on YouTube.
Yep. So there you go. All right. Digger Dog says, haven't yet seen it. Plan to. Okay. Well, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. It's really well done.
I totally concur. Prior to your filming there, Justin, did you happen by any chance to look to see if there were any reports in the area of Lake Henry or at the second location? Anything recent or historical as far as Bigfoot sightings or reports go?
Like Henry Lake is it's relatively close to Port Alberni, which is, it's kind of along the west coast of the island there. And there's quite a few reports actually along the highways. Like people will have sightings at night where the Sasquatch will run in front of their vehicle, or they'll be parked in their vehicle and something will shake their vehicle really violently. And I think there was one report I read where somebody had their vehicle actually flipped over on its side. So it was kind of interesting having those stories in my mind where they seemed kind of aggressive, and then driving out there alone, it wasn't very settling.
I can imagine that, especially at Henry Lake, being out there by yourself. Totally. I can see where you were coming at with that one. Yes. And those are all true. Those are all definitely true. And it has happened. But when the car being flipped over on its side, that's a new one to me. I mean, I've never heard of that one, which is really, really fascinating. Do you mind me asking, was that something that you found on the internet by chance, that report?
Yeah, it was a report. I can't remember the exact website I found it on, but there was a list of reports on Vancouver Island, and that was one of them. There was also another one I found where this vehicle was parked and it was pulling a boat on a trailer, and something came and grabbed a hold of the boat and kind of shook it around while they were parked.
Huh. Yes, that was on a documentary called Bigfoot, the Definitive Guide, where the guy said that this thing was behind his boat and started shaking his boat while he was in his vehicle. Yeah, so that has happened. And also, one of my favorite reports was a guy named Mark Quarton who had seen this thing. The swamp, and then he had a large stone tossed at him, and it was going end over end, and that was on Vancouver Island. And he said it was spiraling like a football towards him. So that was a fascinating report as well.
It kind of seemed to me that on Vancouver Island they were a little more hands-on and aggressive than any of the other reports I've heard. Like in Alberta, they don't seem to be that up close and personal. But so the Nordegg area that I was in, it was quite a ways north of the town of Nordegg, in the middle of nowhere, and that area is really well known for Sasquatch activity, and they have what they call the Sasquatch habituation site around there, where there's apparently a bunch of tree structures. A lot of poking around in that area. There's a lot of people trying to do research there, but
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen, have you ever seen the photograph of this was from Alaska, of these trees that were turned upside down and jammed into the ground with the roots sticking up?
I've seen that on a TV show, actually. It was in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same thing you're talking about.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't know what I think about that, because I've seen a lot of heavy equipment in the forest and how they work, and it'd be very easy for one of these machines to plunge a tree like that right into the ground. They're pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, especially years ago, you know, with a machine being able to do that years ago, any evidence of that now, of course, would there'd be no trace of evidence of that happening.
Well, the forest looks a hell of a lot different than it used to 50 years ago.
This is true, too. This is definitely true, too. You know, Digger Dog, I believe, brought up Dr. John Benardangle. He is awesome. I got to meet the guy in 2012. Had a great time with him. Great author. How was your visit with him? How would you describe Dr. John Benardangle?
He's a super nice guy. Like, he's very nice, very well spoken. And, like, it was kind of weird because I had always seen him on TV as a kid growing up, so it was kind of like going to a celebrity's house.
Yeah.
So I was pretty nervous. But I met him at his house, and he came out to my vehicle, and he's, like, helping me carry all my camera stuff. I'm like, man, like, you don't have to do this. He insisted on everything. And, you know, he's just a really nice, normal guy. But the way he talks about Sasquatch is – like, it's real. Like, he knows that it's a real thing. To him, it's totally real. So it's kind of hard, like, if you're going in as a skeptic, like, and you listen to him talk about it, this guy's, like, a leading authority on the subject. So it's like, how can I doubt what this guy's saying? It's hard. Like, after visiting him, I was like, wow, like, this could really be real. And I felt more like I believed after I talked to him than having, like, the experiences out in the bush myself.
Well, you know, not just that, but you got to see and hold the actual tracks that he casted as well.
Oh, yeah. Super interesting. Like, when it's one thing to see pictures of it, but when you actually hold it, it's very, very impressive.
Oh, man. Very. Yeah, that's awesome. When you were doing, 9:58, depending on where you're listening from. you know what, Henry, I know you got to go here after a little bit. Do you have any more questions for Justin at all?
No, I don't have any more questions. I really enjoyed having him on the show. I mean, this has been tremendous. And hope he comes back. I mean, I highly recommend everybody going to YouTube and look up Wild Man, My Search for Sasquatch. You will not be disappointed. It's tremendous. Great scenery. Some great stuff that they found. The great interview with Dr. Benardangle. I mean, it's all top notch. It's just tremendous. And I have nothing but good to say about it. It's one of the best documentaries I've seen in quite a while. So
I definitely
recommend.
Totally agree. My sentiments are exactly with yours. All right. Well, Henry, I don't know how soon you got to take off. I know you got some things to take care of. Will you be able to stick around until after the break?
Do what?
Will you be able to stick around until after the break?
Unfortunately, no. So.
Okay. Well, I thank you again, brother, and until next week, then, for you.
I will be here for the full 2 hours next week. So.
Okay. Very, very cool. You have yourself a good night, bro. We'll talk with you soon.
Take care, guys.
Yep. God bless.
Take care.
Watch out. All right, Justin, so basically what we're going to do is we're at the top of the hour. This is where we like to take a break here for people to stretch the legs, step outside and have a cigarette, use the restroom or refresh their beverage. So I'm just going to put you on mute as well. We're going to play a couple of songs, and people, do not go anywhere. I warn you. If you do, your computers will never act the same ever again. No. With that being said, no, we'll definitely be right back with Justin on MNBRT Radio.
This is Bob Gimlin from Yakima Valley, a bronc riding son of a gun, speaking to you from MNBRT Radio.
Way up in the north woods and deep in the dark pine that blacken the mountains of the Cascade Range, they still tell the tales of an Indian legend. Sasquatch is the legend, Bigfoot is the name. The Indians claim he's the missing link that fits in the gap of the evolution chain. You can make your mind up when you've heard the story. Sasquatch is the story, Bigfoot is the name. You can ride from Canada to Northern California, all up and down the Cascade Range. But if you go alone, friend, I'm here to warn you. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. From out of the Yakima Indian Reservation, a young cowboy and an Indian came to hunt in the mountains of Northern California. Proof was the purpose, Bigfoot was the game. Now young Roger Patterson ran a small string of horses, and he lived in the foothills in a cabin with his wife. He knew that many secrets were hidden in these mountains, and he had heard the legend of Bigfoot for most all his life. You can ride from Canada to Northern California, all up and down the Cascade Range. But if you go alone, friend, I'm here to warn you. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. 9 years ago, while running wild horses, deep in the mountains with an old Indian friend, he ran across a huge, very huge footprint, and this is where the hunt for the Bigfoot man began. To town and back they went, and they made a plaster cast, 18 inches long from heel to the toe. And from the print that it made, they guessed that it must have weighed 700 pounds or so. You can ride from Canada to Northern California, all up and down the Cascade Range. But if you go alone, friend, I'm here to warn you. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. Now the facts they put together sent chills right up their spines, and the search for a lot more information began. And when they told the story and showed these plaster prints, they only grew laughs from strangers as well as friends. Now up through the years, they found a lot more footprints, and they gathered sworn statements from a lot of decent-minded folks. But when they took these facts up to the educated experts, it was all disregarded and branded as a hoax. You can ride from Canada to Northern California, all up and down the Cascade Range. But if you go alone, friend, I'm here to warn you. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. Now it become a challenge to Roger and the Indian to together more proof and to bring it all forth and show the whole wide world that this Bigfoot man is alive today and living in the mountains to the north. And for years they gathered a lot of signed statements and tapes from people who had seen Bigfoot or his tracks. But still no sightings and no filmed photographs, and they knew they must bring a lot better proof back. You can ride from Canada to Northern California, all up and down the Cascade Range. But if you go alone, friend, I'm here to warn you. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name. Look out for the thing with a Bigfoot name.
This is Bob Gillen from Yakima, Washington. We will be right back with MNBRT Radio.
Yo, listen to MNBRT Radio. We are back. Thank you one and all for joining us. I am your host, Elusive One. We'd like to say thank you to After Hours AM. We'd like to say thank you to iHeartRadio. We had a little bit of technical malfunction. I don't know if you guys can hear me or not. Tonight's guest is Justin Chernepsky. Chernepsky, right, Justin? Are you still there with us?
Chernepesky.
Chernepesky. Man, my face is so red right now. I apologize.
Don't worry.
You know, we're we're talking Bigfoot, of course, here on MMBRQ Radio, and we're talking about Justin's documentary, Wild Man, My Search for Sasquatch. Justin, I mean, you've done your research, you've done your online, you've done your reading, you met Dr. John Bennernagel. In your mind, what do you think that these things are that people are seeing?
Yeah, that's an ongoing debate in my mind.
Yeah.
It's hard. Like, I want to be really scientific about it. I'm not a scientist, but I want to be scientific.
Sure.
You know, thinking that there could be an undiscovered primate of some kind.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. I don't know. There's some weird things that happen. Like, a lot of reports I read about, like, trackways that are found, there will only be, like, two or three tracks and then nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means. And, like, I don't want to get a whole lot into, like, the... Maybe they're from another dimension. They can cross through planes of existence. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not going to say yes or no or what, because, like, I don't know for sure. But my mind is open as to what they could be, and
Who
knows? We won't know until
no
we
doubt.
Can actually shake hands with one. And
that
might not
be
for a while.
So cool. And, you know, and your YouTube page is Mountain Beast Entertainment. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
And that's where people can find your documentary, Wild Man, My Search for Sasquatch, the full movie. Do you have anything else on your YouTube page, Bigfoot related?
There's a couple other videos I made of me basically just chatting about my thoughts. And I did make, I think it's like 45-minute long video kind of going over some unanswered questions that kind of arose from Wild Man. And there's a sequence in there from another little expedition I did near Nordegg, which was in the middle of the winter. So it's kind of a different change of scenery.
You know, I've also done squatching in the wintertime myself here in Minnesota. And it's a whole other ball game out there, you know, in the wintertime. I mean, it's cold, and you got to worry about the cold getting to the equipment and batteries getting drained and things of that nature. What type of troubles have you found while you were out in the wintertime looking for Bigfoot?
I think the biggest troubles that I had was actually getting around. You can't get around nearly as efficiently as in the summer. Because in a lot of these remote places, the roads are not maintained. So you need chains on the tires of your truck, and then you need some sort of off-road vehicle. And then when you have that, like a snowmobile or an Argo or anything like that, you're making so much noise that it makes everything a whole lot more tricky.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, and with that, it could go 50-50. Either the noise could draw them closer to inspect, or it could keep them away because they're scared of it and they know what's on them or what's behind them making those sounds or driving them, so to speak. Have you ever thought about doing a sequel, I guess you could say, to Wild Man, My Search for Sasquatch?
I have, and it is in the works.
Oh, is it really? Wow.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Will this be taking place up in Canada in the same location, or are you going to somewhere completely different?
It'll be in Canada, mostly in Alberta, but it'll be different locations, and it'll be different. It'll be good.
Cool.
A little bit more adventurous.
Oh, man. That sounds so fun. Have you had in the field time yet so far?
Any field time yet since?
Well, it was for your second Wild Man documentary.
I've been out once.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say much about that yet.
Okay. No, oh man, you got me on the edge of my seat. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. So you've had some time. Is this one going to be primarily in the fall time as well, or is that saying too much right there too?
Yeah, primarily in the fall and a little bit in the summer. So
nice.
I like.
Are there going to be any more? I guess you say
doctors or scientists in this second documentary?
There will be some more local people from my area who are, you know, very familiar with the Nordegg area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, man. Oh.
It's still in development, so there's a lot more stuff planned for it.
I'm excited for you, man. I wish you all the best in that, no doubt. To do something like that is very, very cool. You know, as far as equipment goes, what kind of a camera are you using? Are you got night vision and thermal imaging or anything like that?
For cameras, like I like to use digital SLRs for doing all my video work because they're so small and easy to transport. I like using trail cameras myself. A lot of people tell me they're useless, and, you know, I'd rather have a camera somewhere than no camera at all and have zero chance of getting a photograph or a video or something. So I'm going to stick with trail cameras and, I don't know, night vision cameras. Really good quality ones are kind of pricey, so.
Yes. They sure
it would be
are.
Nice to get a clear, some kind of thermal camera, but. We will see. I like drones. I'll say that. Get a bird.
I noticed that in your first documentary. Great bird.
Yeah,
thank
I had
you.
A lot of
good quality.
Yeah. I used the drone primarily for that one, just to get some scenic shots and some B-roll. But I would like to use the drone more to actually look for the creature.
That's very,
as opposed
very,
to just
very cool.
Shots. Yeah.
You know, I have a drone as well, and, you know, for, it'd be good, I mean, you'll get good scenery, good topo shots and stuff like that, but as far as maneuvering something like that, weaving in and out of the timber and the trees, man, I mean, you're risking a drone right there, basically. I mean, it's so hard to do.
It is hard, but luckily, these drones that are coming out nowadays are getting harder and harder to crash. They have lots of sensors on them now. And
oh, very cool. Yeah. So what is the goal? I mean, I know you said you wanted to see one, be able to have it your own Class A sighting. As far as, you know, your documentaries go, what are you hoping to bring out to gain from this?
I don't really want to gain anything other than knowing for myself if they're real or not. I just wonder all the time. And I want to get more people interested in the subject and more people out in the outdoors. And, you know, you can watch as many YouTube videos as you want all day and just sit around and think about it. But it is really nice to get outside and to, even if you think Bigfoot's kind of a silly subject and you're not really interested in it, then maybe they'll be inspired by seeing these locations and just getting inside.
Yeah. No, I totally hear you. You know, from doing this for 17 years myself, I have been to some truly jaw-dropping locations. I've seen some very beautiful things in doing field research and investigations as well. I can only imagine. I mean, I've never left the United States, but when I seen Henry Lake, I was just like, oh my gosh, that's beautiful, the water there. I mean, I was almost betting that it was clear water. It's a piece of heaven when you get out there and you're in that solitude. And, well, for me, at least, I should say, and I'm out there doing what I like to do and love to do. And even if I don't have anything Bigfoot-related happening, I know I'm out there in a place that very few people have laid feet on or let alone eyes on as well. And it's just, you know, it reminds me of how small we really are, you know?
Oh, totally.
Totally. I mean,
you never go home, empty-handed.
No, you don't. Even if you don't have any activity, it's always worthwhile getting out there and enjoying nature, you know, God's country, God's creation. So, you know, there's two sides of the coin of this research. and I ask people this because I like to know where they're coming from. There's the pro kill and the no kill side. Me personally, I'm no kill. I'm all about, you know, conservation, preservation, and protection. You know, their forestry is getting cut down, but there's also so much land out there that's like I just mentioned, where people have yet to step foot on or even laid eyes on. Where do you come in to play with this? I mean, are you on the pro kill side? And I ask this because people say, yeah, you know, science is going to require a body, and I realize that too. But you're not going to find me pulling the trigger. The only trigger that I'll be pulling is the one behind the camera, or the FLIR thermal imager. And hopefully, you know, I think we can get good enough HD video without having one on a gurney get dissected. Well, hopefully, again, I stress that, hopefully we bring proof that, hey, yeah, these are real. But so, like, again, I reiterate my question. Where do you fall? What camp do you come from?
I'm not pro-kill, but I'm pro-carry, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, I do. Because there's things that are out there. I totally get that. You got your bears, you got your big, your cats, whatever, you know, critters out there that can hunt you and will hunt you if they see you as prey, or if they're hungry enough or whatever, old enough to see you as an easy target, definitely. Or also say you have that one, you have that encounter with a rogue Sasquatch, and he's just, well, not the friendliest guy in the forest right at the moment. And, you know, he's looks like, yeah. So it's better in him than you. I hear you there.
Yeah. Like the places you're going into to look for a Sasquatch, they're not like your regular national park where the animals are accustomed to humans.
Right.
Like they're a lot more skittish and defensive. So I don't know. I want to protect myself because I'd rather go to the woods and not see a Sasquatch than never come home again, personally.
Yeah.
And, you know, every, like, in Alberta and British Columbia, there every year there's attack reports and people getting attacked by grizzly bears. I think it was last summer in Montana I saw a video of a guy who got beat up pretty good by a grizzly bear, and he was filming himself after, covered in blood.
Cool.
He had bear spray, and it didn't really seem to affect him.
Yes, I've seen that as well. Yeah, bear spray, pepper spray. Yeah, here, let me saute myself right quick. No. Poor guy. I mean, I don't mean to poke at him, but, you know, I mean, I guess I carry bear spray too. And here in Minnesota, we have black bear, which are a real skittish bear. Yeah, so I guess we're lucky in that aspect. And I have not yet, in 17 years of doing this, stumbled across a black bear. What would I do? I'd raise Cain, really. I'd be yelling and jumping up and down, trying to spook it off. But there's that, again, you know, you just never know. It might be a crazy bear, a bad bear, a rabid bear, or a sow with her cubs. You just never know what you're going to run into. So,
they're very unpredictable.
Yeah, totally. Totally are, man. Totally. And, you know, at the very least, I don't like to carry a firearm, but I do carry pepper spray. You know, that reminds me, I better check the expiration date. Now that I think about it, those things. I just really want to say this has been a great. You have all of my support. It's been fun having you on. I wish we could talk more about your upcoming documentary, but I know you want to keep a lot of it under wraps, which I get it. I really do. You know, and I really applaud you for going out there and having the cojones, spending out the night out in the woods by yourself, especially in the location where your dad had rocks thrown at him, and you know there might be something lurking around, and you're hearing things out there that sounds like what's
said, it very well could have just been them out there, totally. You know, it takes a certain kind of crazy to do something like that. And I say that because I got that certain kind of crazy as well.
So I think you need that.
Yeah, you do. You do. And I totally applaud you for doing that. It sounds like fun. It really does. You know, what you said is that you want to make more people aware of this. You know, and that's awesome. I love to educate people about the Sasquatch myself. And I think a lot of it, you know, people just throw out the window with a closed mind that it's not a real creature. It's not a real thing. It's just myth. You're chasing something that doesn't exist. I've got that for 17 years. Throughout the 17 years, I've grown thick skin. I've been called crazy, cuckoo. Oh, you're high. You're drinking. You know, and it's like, I'm hearing these things. I'm experiencing these things. I have team members that are experiencing these things with me. Other people are experiencing these things as well prior to the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team being started, or MNBRT Radio going on the air in 2009. I'm not the only one that's in this period. There's thousands of people out there who have had things that I have experienced happen to themselves. And it's still going on to this modern day. And I totally agree with you. We can make more people aware of this creature not being a myth, but an actuality, a reality, and to spend as much field time out in the woods to get knowledge that is needed about these critters, the more education we can provide. And I think you're one of those guys that wants answers and knows how to, and in the pursuit, you have a goal, you have something that you want to conquer, and I wish you all the best, and you have our support here at the Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes. I know it sounds like you've got a passion. You've had a passion since you were young. And now that you're an adult, you're going out there and getting answers for yourself, which a lot of people, they don't do. They will just sit behind a computer, behind a TV screen, and watch and come up with their own hypothesis instead of getting out there in the woods where the real answers or questions are answered. Or you'll find out, you'll learn something. And like, you know, and I'm sure you know, not every time you go out in the woods, you're going to have some squashy happen, so to speak. But it's never a waste of time.
No, exactly. And, like, I don't think, like, a lot of people probably don't realize how huge of a discovery it would be, like something that exists that is so close to human.
Yes.
Like, that's huge. Like, it's happened before, like, I don't know. I'm not a historian, but, like, 150,000 years ago, 200,000 years ago, there were different types of man-like creatures living side by side. So it's not like it hasn't happened before.
Right.
You,
I mean,
you know,
you're look at the fossil records.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. Is there anything that you would like to talk about that we haven't covered, or anything that you want to say at all?
Well, I was going to say, I was going to mention a story I just read of an encounter that happened back in the Second World War. I thought it was super interesting because I never heard this story before. Actually, I read it in a book called The Long Walk, and it's by a guy named Slavomir Rawich, I think is how you say his name. And it's basically his memoirs of escaping a POW camp in Siberia in the Second World War. And so him and a bunch of other guys, they escaped this camp, and they hiked on foot all the way through, like, the Gobi Desert and into the Himalayan mountains. And, like, the whole book is really good. I recommend reading the whole book. But near the end, one of the last chapters, there's a really short chapter. I think it's called Strange Creatures. And it mentions them stumbling upon these, he basically describes Sasquatch, and there's multiple Sasquatch walking around, and they observe them for like 20 minutes. And the way he writes about it is like, it wasn't even a big deal to him, really. So I don't know. It was just very interesting, coming from before the 50s.
Yeah,
and
World War II.
Malayan region. But then again,
and,
you know, could have been.
I was going to say that, you know, that's the region of the Yeti.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the Gobi and the Himalayas. Yes. That'd be more along the lines of like Nepal and definitely Yeti type creatures.
Yes.
And the book is called The Long Walk.
The Long Walk, yeah. Very interesting, because the whole book's kind of like a true story of his experience, and that was kind of a pleasant surprise to read about that. I wasn't expecting it.
No, I mean, something like that is an eye opener. Even in World War II, people, even in Vietnam, Sumatra, we got the Orang Pendak. I mean, there's creatures, Bigfoot-like creatures, of course, of different sizes, on every single continent, basically, except for one, and that's Antarctica. As far as we know, I mean, who knows what the fossil records are going to show someday. But definitely, man. Justin, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Is there any type of looking at a release date, a production date, or anything like that for your second documentary?
I want to say the fall of 2018, but it's not 100% confirmed yet.
Okay.
That's my goal.
Cool. Very, very cool. I've had a blast having you on. I hope you enjoy yourself, and I apologize again and again and again about slaughtering your last name. Oh, man. But I do feel bad. And it is Justin.
Don't feel bad. I'm so used to it.
Chernepesky. Man, I did it again. Oh, my God.
Just got to say it really slow.
Come on.
Don't beat yourself up.
Okay. All right, Justin. I look forward to having you on the show again somewhere down the road. I'll be paying attention to your YouTube page, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. God bless you. Have yourself a great night.
You as well.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, just listen to another episode of Minnesota Bigfoot Research Team Radio Show with our guest tonight, Justin Chernepsky. Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm just going to shut up right now. I'm going to say, stay tuned to MMPRQ Radio for next week. And we have more Bigfoot talk with more guests. This is Louis Savant.
MNBRT Radio thanks you for tuning in and making us a part of your home. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great show. Be sure to check out MNBRT Radio on Facebook and like the page to keep up with the show and to leave any questions or comments. The truth is out there waiting to be discovered. Squatch on.
Chernepesky.